This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled Plugging the Leak, a conversation on incontinence. I'm Dr. Kevin June. I'm joined as always with my beautiful co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, fill me in on your Giants, man. I know you've been waiting to kind of brag about them to me.
Oh, yeah. So as of this recording, the Giants are currently 3-1.
Oh, that's foreign to you.
Could have been 4-0.
That's foreign to you. That's foreign to you.
First off, haven't had three wins before November in at least 5-6 years. So this is a beautiful time right now. Are the Giants actually good? No, of course not. They're not good.
Whoa. I want to go as far as saying that. You got to have faith in your team. You got to have faith in your team. Well,
Listen, you're a Steelers fan.
I am.
You've got nothing going for you right now.
Hey, we
got Kenny Pickett. It's a good season.
He looked pretty good. I must say he looked pretty good. He threw, I think, three interceptions, but you know.
Three interceptions.
I wouldn't blame him. I'd blame his his receiving core, but you know.
I also don't think he has a great offensive line at this point. But listen, you have a nice offseason here because you can just see Kenny Pickett do Kenny Pickett.
100%.
You're really evaluating a quarterback and see where you're at. Us, you know, I don't think Danny Dimes is the answer. I think most people agree with that. But we do have Saquon who is back. And he's unbelievable.
But you know, it's a pretty heavy QB class. So wouldn't you kind of argue that, you know, you kind of, if you're not feeling Danny Dimes as your man, wouldn't you want to kind of just go to shit? Not tank, but like, you know, just go to shit and just grab
No. Usually I would say yes if it's an old coach. It's a new coach. You need Daboll, who is a great coach. Right. I think everyone will agree. We got our guy finally. But if you are new and you want and you're dealing with a losing scenario, you want to set a positive tone, right? You want to set a winning culture and build. You want people to buy into you who have never really won in the NFL. So teaching people how to win is very important. I think that goes with a lot of things that we apply in life and in men's health, right? Like when you're down, you kind of don't know what it's like to be up sometimes until you got someone to come in and change that, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you've been with the Steelers. They haven't had a below 50.
We haven't had a losing season.
They haven't been under 500.
Yeah. It's the Mike Tomlin way,
years,
you know.
Right?
It's the Mike Tomlin way.
So I've only experienced pain since 2008. So
That's not a terrible thing. There's other teams like, you know, the Browns, Vikings. It's been a little bit longer since they've had any sort of, you know, glimmer of hope. So
So, you know, I'm excited. It's a good season. They're gonna be in London. They're probably gonna get crushed by Green Bay, but who knows? We'll see. But that's not why we're here. We're actually here to talk about men's health.
Yes.
As you and I, we always love talking football. We're always down to talk some football. So we're actually joined in this episode by Dr. Zeho Lee, who is at Northwestern. I did my fellowship at Northwestern. I got to see Dr. Lee firsthand. He is an amazing surgeon. He's currently the assistant professor of urology and director of male reconstruction and robotic reconstructive surgery at Northwestern. And it was really a pleasure to see him work. He's an awesome guy. He's an awesome surgeon. And he talked about with us urinary incontinence. And when we talk about urinary incontinence, a lot of people think mostly women when it comes to incontinence. They think about leaking. They think about, you know, women, stress incontinence, sneezing, coughing, usually after birth, childbirth. But believe it or not, there's situations with which men have this issue. Right, Kev?
Absolutely. You know, I think over this past week, I've already seen, you know, quite a few patients who come in and they just say like, yo, doc, like I'm leaking urine. I'm embarrassed. It's had this huge impact on my life. I'm not able to go golfing. I'm not able to do the regular things I do. And my quality of life is, you know, for lack of better words, just complete shit right now, you know? And so, the thing is, a lot of times these guys just don't know, you know, the different treatment options or that there are things that can be done or investigated to understand what's going on. And so I think Dr. Lee in this episode does a fantastic job of really just kind of breaking it down. So our listeners kind of have an idea of like what could cause it and what can be done for it. Right, Justin?
Yeah, and I think that you bring up a really interesting and important point, because most guys, they know erectile dysfunction, they talk about erectile dysfunction, right, but they're not talking about leakage. And erectile dysfunction, you can hide, right? Like there's, you can hide it for most people. Okay, you probably can't hide it for one or two
right,
people.
Right, right.
But urinary incontinence, if it's a bad problem,
yep,
it impacts you in a social setting.
Absolutely.
Right? Like you said, you can't do the things that you want to do. You can't, you know, go out for dinner if it's a long, long sit down, or you're worried that you're going to just leak on yourself. You can't do the sports. You can't play golf. You can't do the things that you want to do in your everyday life because you're embarrassed of these social implications, which is obviously very different from erectile dysfunction. It's embarrassing for, you know, we understand for other purposes, but most people don't see it and they don't know. So I think that guys should be encouraged that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel here. There's ways that we can help treat your incontinence. And I agree with you. This is a really great talk with Dr. Lee to give us perspective on that. Anything else you want to say, Kev, before we get into it?
No, I think, you know, for our listeners, this can seem like a complex topic or a topic that you kind of feel like, oh man, I'm leaking urine. This is it. Like, this is what I'm going to be for, you know, have for the rest of the life, of life. But no, as you'll be able to see and hear that, you know, there are many options out there, and this is not something you necessarily have to live with. So.
I agree. I think that's a great way to summarize it. And having said that, let's get into the episode. Enjoy.
Did you know that over 25 million Americans experience bladder leaks?
Incontinence can happen to anyone at any time, and when it does, incontinence products are a necessity. But it can cost hundreds of dollars per month to purchase these products, which is why we're partnering with Aeroflow Urology to help you.
Aeroflow Urology provides medical-grade continence care essentials like adult briefs, male guards, catheters, and more for free through your insurance. With Aeroflow, your favorite bladder control supplies are sent right to your doorstep with their discreet monthly deliveries.
Customers have reported close to $200 a month in savings with Aeroflow Urology, and over 2 million people have trusted Aeroflow to verify their insurance benefits. All you need to do is fill out their quick 2-minute form.
To check you or your loved one's eligibility, visit aeroflowurology.com/manuppod. That's aeroflowurology.com/manuppod.
All right. So we're really excited to be joined today by with Dr. Zeho Lee. He's the assistant professor of urology, and he's the director of male reconstruction and robotic reconstructive surgery here at Northwestern. I've got to know him over the last year doing my fellowship. This guy is a living legend. He's just started off, but incredibly well-respected, well-established within the field, and we're really honored to have him here today. Welcome, Dr. Lee.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin and Kevin. And thanks for the kind intro.
Of course, of course.
All right, so Dr. Lee, let's just jump right in. All right, so the topic of this podcast is incontinence. What is incontinence?
Yeah, so you know, I define incontinence as, you know, any time a patient leaks urine when they don't want to, and you know, looking into incontinence, you know, I think there are different types. And, you know, when we think about incontinence, I think it's really important to characterize the actual type of incontinence to really help guide and gauge, you know, how bothersome this is and what kind of treatment options are available for patients.
Right. Now, exactly what you said, there's a lot of different kinds of incontinence. So I know we could talk about the different kinds for literally days, but can you give a quick summary of like the main kinds of incontinence that are out there or exist?
Yeah. So when I think about incontinence, I like to break them up into, you know, four major categories. The first would be, stress incontinence, where, you know, stress incontinence would be defined by when a patient leaks urine after performing stress maneuvers. The most common ones would be things like coughing or laughing or even just kind of climbing steps or anything that exerts pressure on the belly. The next type that I often manage is overflow incontinence. Overflow is incontinence that happens because essentially the bladder fills up too high and urine is just leaking off the top. I like to always paint the picture as, you know, imagine you have this cup and a faucet is running, and the leakage that occurs over the top of the cup once it fills to the top, that's what I define as overflow incontinence. Another type of incontinence is something called urge incontinence. Urge incontinence would be when a patient has an intense urge or desire to void and they're not able to make it to the bathroom in time. And so they leak some urine because of an intense urge. And the last type of incontinence is mixed incontinence, which is a combination of incontinence. Oftentimes, this refers to a combination of both stress and urge.
Nice. I mean, that was well put. I think just to summarize real quick, so there's four types: stress, overflow, urge, and mixed. Now, just to really give a really basic question, you know, as a patient, how do you know if you are incontinent? Like, are the symptoms the same for all the different kinds?
Yeah, so that's a great question because, you know, I think a lot of incontinence, especially management and evaluation, you know, you really have to work with patients because at the end of the day, you know, the patients are the driving force here. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, there are patients who do leak some urine from time to time, but they're not really bothered by it. Is that incontinence? Yes, in kind of the most literal sense, it is incontinence. But in general, you know, I like to think about incontinence as, you know, does it bother the patient? Is it bothered to the patient? And that's kind of where I start.
Right. I think that's a great point because a lot of people, you know, we've seen it, and obviously you've seen it more than us, but, you know, some guys will come in and they'll say, hey, you know, I sometimes get the urge, I got to go pee and I can't hold it in. It happens a couple times a week or whatever, but I'm all right. And then sometimes you see a guy who says, this happens, you know, once every week, but I can't deal with it. Like, I'm going to lose my mind every time this happens. So I think the point here is communication, right? If you're the guy who's dealing with these issues, it's really important when you're talking with your doctor to express the significance of this issue to your doctor, because we're really going to treat it based on how much it bothers you. And that really determines the kind of interventions and the way that we're going to treat you. So it's important that you communicate with your doctor on that matter. And, you know, just to follow up with these different kinds and different ways of feeling incontinent, is there one that is the most common form when it comes to men specifically?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, honestly, I think it really depends on kind of age range. So oftentimes I actually have a lot of younger men in kind of their 30s and 40s who present with some dribbling after voiding and also urge incontinence. And so I think in the younger age range, like 30 to 40 year old men, I'll have a lot of patients primarily complaining of post-void dribbling or some urge incontinence. Whereas more older men who have undergone some kind of prostate surgery or radiation, you know, whether that's some kind of outlet procedure that's performed to help reduce the size of your prostate or radical prostatectomy after prostate cancer or even radiation for prostate cancer. In those men in general, I see patients with stress incontinence, where, you know, again, this is when patients leak after, you know, they cough or laugh or they're running up steps.
Nice. So, you know, I think you touched upon it a little bit there. You talked about, like, you know, men who've undergone prostate surgery or some sort of outlet procedure. Just in general, for our listeners, what are the most common causes of incontinence, if it's not those two?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. It kind of depends on the patient themselves. Again, you know, I think, you know, again, younger patients, I think they're going to have more of the dribbling or kind of urge incontinence. Men who have suffered kind of spinal cord injuries, those patients can sometimes have kind of overflow incontinence because their bladders aren't functioning as well. Then also sometimes in the setting of uncontrolled diabetes, where kind of the nerve endings in the bladder don't work as well. And so the patients aren't able to contract their bladder. Those patients as well, they'll also have a significant degree of kind of overflow incontinence as well.
I think that's an important point because, and when we're talking about all patients here, diabetes has come up in almost every conversation for men's health. You know, like everyone. It's literally like
right.
Everyone thinks diabetes is like, you know, we call it, doctors call it the silent killer. You know, people don't think it's a problem until it's a problem, right? You know, and people think, oh, you know, whatever, I might have like a little bit of overweight. I might, you know, have a little numbness in my hands or in fingers. No, you're going to have peeing problems. Your penis isn't going to work. There's a lot of things that come along with diabetes.
Not good stuff, man. Not good stuff.
Not good at all. Good. But one thing that I find interesting, which I kind of want to know more about, is this younger population who have this post, what we call post void dribbling. What is the cause of that in this population? And I think a lot of guys, me included, you know, we see these guys and they come in, they're like, oh, you know, a couple times I'm leaking a little bit, I'd shake it off and I'm still still going a little bit. Is there a level of cause for concern? Because I think we've all been there where we got a little bit of wetness in our pants, but I mean, that's just the way it is sometimes.
And, you know, that's a great kind of synopsis here because, you know, it is very common. And, you know, what exactly causes that? And, you know, when you look at the male urethra, you know, it's much longer than just kind of the size of your penis. You know, your urethra actually extends pretty far back and goes all the way into your bladder, which is kind of behind your pubic bone. And so, you know, the length of the urethra or the tube that helps drain urine from the bladder is much longer than what you see. And compared to in women where, you know, you're looking at a urethra or the tube that's about 3 to 4 centimeters. In males, it's much longer. And so, you know, the only thing that actually contracts is your bladder. And so your bladder will push the urine and, you know, like any kind of tube, sometimes some extra urine can get kind of trapped in the tube and it's just there. And so, you know, if you're in a rush or, you know, you go to the restroom and you got to run somewhere and you don't kind of, you know, shake things off and let things drain, you know, oftentimes, you know, you're going to have dribbling and, you know, it's very normal to have dribbling. But this can obviously be very bothersome. You know, interestingly, I find a lot of men with very kind of high stress jobs or stressful kind of social situations will have a significant amount of dribbling. I'm not sure if it's just this subset of patients that I'm seeing, but I tend to find that in a lot of these men. But in those men, you know, it's, you know, once I draw them a picture of kind of the anatomy and they kind of see, well, hey, yeah, it kind of makes sense that some urine would be trapped there. You know, once people kind of understand that, it's a little bit more reasonable. But for that, you know, I kind of just recommend, you know, shaking things off. Sometimes you can push a little pressure behind the scrotum to really kind of excrete the urine out. And so kind of those two kind of behavioral things can oftentimes help you with that.
Yeah.
So you heard it from a professional, guys.
Those are the two things to do. Just shake it. No, a lot of people want meds for that. You know, I've had patients come in like, hey, I want some meds for my post-void dribbling. And, you know, you're kind of like, you know, there's really no meds, you know, just the two things that Dr. Lee kind of talked about there can really help. But, you know, that kind of builds upon this whole thing, you know, just urinary issues, you know, leakage, you know, it can get so bad that guys need diapers. And it's just an embarrassing thing. Like, look, we're doing this podcast because we want to normalize these things that are part of men's health. So, you know, do you find that most men delay or even ignore coming in to talk about their urinary leakage?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, you know, I think kind of depends on the age range, but, you know, in most men, I think there is kind of a stigma against kind of dribbling. I mean, even, you know, after a prostatectomy where, you know, there's, you know, 5 to 10% chance that you're going to be incontinent of urine, you know, I do see a lot of men kind of delay. And I think a lot of that has to do with kind of the social kind of stigma against urinary leakage. And, you know, like you said, Kevin, I think that's a really good point, you know, trying to normalize these issues. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I think as urologists, we're here to help. We want to help patients. And, you know, if we don't know about it, you know, we can't help. And I think, you know, if anything is bothersome, you know, just keeping an open line of communication is very important, because, you know, it can be embarrassing talking about it. You know, it can be embarrassing to their partners. And so, you know, I think normalizing it and really kind of having an open line of communication and being able to, you know, find a trustworthy urologist, someone you trust and someone, you know, that they can kind of help you through these issues is just really critical.
Excellent point. And I, as embarrassing as it may be for guys, I think, to talk about these things, I would, you know, from my perspective, it's like, do you want to wear diapers and be wet, or talk with your doctor? We can help you. It's just a conversation. Right. And there's things that we can do. And we'll get into that a little bit later in the episode. But, you know, when it comes to incontinence, and another reason of why it's important to talk with doctors is incontinence can, obviously, we talked about reasons for it, but it can come at a price, right? Like, what happens if you don't talk to your doctor? Other than wearing diapers, what are other things that you can be at risk for if you don't seek treatment, if you don't get care from a doctor?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, the number one thing is kind of effect on your quality of life. I mean, there's been so many studies that, you know, it just leads to a worse quality of life. You know, a lot of times men will complain to me, you know, I'm going to a family gathering, or we're going out to eat and I got to take an extra backpack with me to pack some diapers, or, you know, I'm going golfing with my buddies and, you know, after every hole, I have to change my diaper. You know, I think when it comes, and, you know, and aside from kind of the quality of life factor, you know, there's some kind of, you know, physical ailments or adverse effects that can have on kind of your body as well. One of those things is, you know, urine, is very kind of caustic to the skin, right? And so urine is something that can damage the skin. And so sometimes men, especially those who are uncircumcised or have a little bit of redundant foreskin, you know, that urine can get kind of trapped in kind of the foreskin area or your penis and cause irritation and actually cause infection. Also that, you know, bacteria from there can also kind of go up into your bladder, and you can get urinary tract infections. So, you know, like you said, Justin, you know, there are kind of, you know, even beyond kind of the quality of life issues, there are kind of, you know, physical kind of adverse effects it can have as well.
I mean, that's a great point. I know, Dr. Lee, you see it a lot. And Justin, we saw it when we were, you know, during our residency training. You know, that's something that patients don't think about, that urine can dribble down onto the skin and cause a lot of irritation, and it can hurt and cause a lot of issues, you know. Kind of to bring it back now to, let's just focus on one type of these urinary incontinence, stress incontinence. A lot of things that come out of a urologist's mouth is the word Kegels. So what are Kegels?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I get asked this a ton because, you know, Kegels are an activity that's oftentimes recommended for kind of women to kind of prevent incontinence after kind of childbearing. In men, you know, I think every urologist who performs prostatectomy does recommend that men perform Kegels leading up to and after surgery. So what exactly is Kegel? And I think when we think about this, we really have to go back to kind of the anatomy. And so when I talk to patients, I always describe kind of your muscles in your pelvis as almost kind of like a bowl or a hammock. And so kind of in your seat area, there's kind of a bowl or a hammock with certain muscles that kind of help maintain kind of structural integrity and help you kind of maintain continence. And we think about it, you know, we go to the gym, we lift weights, or, you know, we go on runs, or you know, we do certain exercises to kind of work out our muscles. But, you know, when was the last time we really worked out kind of our pelvic floor muscles? No one says, yeah, you know, I went to go hit the gym and I really worked on my pelvic floor, right? You know, so it's not like it's often talked about. But, you know, as far as kind of your urinary health, you know, the Kegels are definitely an activity that can help with not only stress incontinence like we were talking about, but also urge incontinence. So when I talk about Kegels, you know, it's very difficult to describe exactly, you know, how to palpate or feel the muscle to patients. And so the way I usually describe it is, you know, when the patient goes to the restroom and they're peeing, and I ask them to stop their stream, you know, generate a really strong stream, right, and then try to stop that. And that muscle that you use to kind of stop your urine, that's a Kegel. And another way to kind of describe that is you kind of want to move your penis up and in.
I'm Kegeling and right now.
Well, me too.
So, we're all Kegeling.
Yeah. So, you know, that's an activity that, an exercise that you can do to kind of help, you know, find that muscle, you know, oftentimes, you know, just trying to pee. And after, while you're peeing, just try to stop your stream. And that's the muscle. And, you know, and try to pull your penis up and in. And, you know, those, there's different exercise regimens. You know, I often recommend that patients kind of flex your, you know, do a Kegel 10 times. And then on the 10th one, try to hold it down for 10 seconds and repeat that for 3 reps. You know, I recommend doing that, you know, once before you go to bed and once when you wake up. And there's, you know, it's difficult to find the exact muscle to use. And some patients do have difficulty finding that. But for that, those patients, you know, we do kind of work together with our pelvic floor physical therapy colleagues. And we're lucky here at Northwestern where there's the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, and, you know, the pelvic floor team is just outstanding.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and kind of to follow up on that, so Kegels is one way you can potentially treat stress incontinence. But as you know, patients, especially post-prostatectomy, that may not do the job. And there's surgical treatments for this. So I guess, can you give us a quick summary of the kind of surgical interventions that you can use for stress incontinence?
Yeah, you know, I think this is, you know, a big passion of mine because, you know, it's one of my favorite procedures to do, you know, managing incontinence after prostatectomy or some kind of prostate intervention. Because, you know, here's a patient, you know, they're super low quality of life, you know, mm-hmm. patients who were once active, they're afraid to go out, they're afraid to go golfing, they're afraid to, you know, hang out with their friends and family. And, you know, here they come and, you know, there's a procedure, you know, I perform all these in the same day procedure, and it's truly life-changing. You know, my favorite day, you know, in clinic is when I have patients who come after these surgeries, and, you know, it's like high fives and hugs all around. And it's just so rewarding to see patients get their life back. And, you know, so when I talk about surgical treatment options, there are two major options that I recommend. Number one is a sling. A sling is essentially just a piece of mesh. And, you know, oftentimes we hear in women undergoing anti-incontinence therapy, they'll get a sling. Well, it's kind of analogous to the male sling. Essentially what it is it kind of supports, it's a piece of mesh that is inserted that helps kind of support your pelvic floor and kind of helps support that hammock. And so it's a, you know, pretty quick procedure. You know, patients do pretty well as long as you select an appropriate patient. Oftentimes I recommend this for patients with mild to moderate stress incontinence. And it's kind of a plug and play. So you insert the sling. Once it's inserted, the patient doesn't need to do anything. They just live their life and they can just kind of, they don't need to push any buttons or do anything. It's just there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And
as a quick side, you did say the word mesh a couple of times. I know that does trigger some people, you know, with all that stuff. Just would love a comment on the mesh aspect of it and its safety. We all know that these things are safe. We're not just putting these kinds of things in. Just would love your comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, with things kind of in the news and such, you know, right. I definitely understand kind of maybe some hesitancy towards the mesh. But, you know, we use mesh that's, you know, it's been approved and FDA approved to use. And, you know, we still use it for a lot of, you know, some hernia surgeries, for example, and then also some other procedures to kind of support, you know, our normal anatomy. It can be used to augment kind of our natural anatomy. But, you know, mesh, it's very safe. You know, it's pretty rare to have complications with the mesh itself. And I find that it's very well tolerated. So I don't have, you know, too many qualms. And I do routinely do this procedure, and definitely can attest to their safety. As far as kind of the second option, when it comes to anti-incontinence treatment, there is the artificial urinary sphincter. And this we consider to be kind of the gold standard of anti-incontinence therapy. And when we think about it, I always kind of draw the analogy. It's like we take a blood pressure cuff and we put it around your urethra, that tube that allows you to drain urine from the bladder.
Blood pressure
cuff. And so that cuff always stays full, and it's filled with sterile water. And there is a balloon reservoir that's often inserted into the abdomen that is contains some water. And then within your scrotum, there is a small pump. And this pump, anytime a patient wishes to void, they go to the restroom, they find the pump in their scrotum, and they push the pump that allows that blood pressure cuff to kind of release. And that allows the patient to void, and that cuff will automatically refill with water and kind of coapt or kind of close your urethra. And we call it the sphincter because it acts like, you know, a sphincter that you would have, but it's just kind of an object that we insert, or a device that we insert to allow you to obtain continence.
Dr. Lee, that was a fantastic breakdown of how each of those work. I mean, a lot of patients ask us always like, oh, tell me how an AUS works. Tell me how the sling is. And I think that was a really great breakdown just of how both of those kind of, you know, try to treat the problem. So a lot of our listeners, you know, they are patients who've had prostatectomies. That's why they listen to our episodes, because they have the ED, they have the incontinence. For these patients after a prostatectomy, they always want to know, you know, how long should they wait before getting any sort of surgery, whether it's the AUS or the sling?
That's an outstanding question, and one I get asked quite frequently. You know, in general, when I talk to patients, I always kind of draw them a graph, and this graph kind of shows kind of national averages in terms of when they can expect to obtain continence after prostatectomy. So, you know, data show that at about 6 months, approximately 90% of men will be continent. Okay. And then from 6 to 12 months, another 4% will be continent. So after a year, you should expect about 94% of men to be continent. After another year, if you wait another year, so 2 years, another 1% will be continent of urine. So after 2 years, approximately 95%. And so, you know, you experience the most improvement from right after surgery to about 6 months. And so in general, I usually wait about 6 months after surgery to kind of initiate any kind of treatment. But, you know, I get patients not uncommonly where, you know, they'll have severe incontinence where, you know, they're wearing, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 pads at 3 months. And, you know, they come to me, they're like, hey, listen, like, I'm a mess right now. This is real. I'm really struggling. What can we do? And, you know, we'll make arrangements to, you know, those patients maybe, you know, they may not have the best kind of outlook in terms of when they would achieve continence. And so, you know, at those patients, I do offer surgery at about 6 months after surgery.
So 6 months is pretty, right. So 6 months is kind of the cutoff, but there is hope is basically what you're saying. There is hope for a lot of these guys that they do get dry after a while.
Definitely. And, you know, I think one of the things, you know, yeah, we talk about men with severe incontinence and we always say, oh man, like, you know, we always think as physicians, oh, well, if they have worse incontinence, they probably have a worse quality of life. But that's not necessarily true, right? So some men are very bothered by even a small amount of leakage. And, right. You know, I think here, this is where, you know, should be all patient driven, you know, again, you know, I think the patient's in charge here and we are trying to help them. And, you know, when a patient does have incontinence, even if it's a little bit, you know, if it's bothersome to them, you know, that's something I want to help them with and help treat.
And right. And that's something that they need to talk to us about. So we can.
Definitely.
So, you know, we talked about one extreme of surgery, but what about the other extreme? What if someone doesn't want to get surgery? They don't want to take any medications or anything like that. What are some lifestyle changes or behaviors other than Kegels that we talked about that you can do. And I guess this also depends on what kind of incontinence you obviously have.
Yeah.
But I guess you can kind of give us a brief summary, because there are things that Kevin and I both know that you can do to kind of improve some of these incontinence issues.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, if we go back to someone with kind of stress incontinence, maybe the patient's maybe not a good surgical candidate, or maybe they have a lot of other kind of medical conditions, excuse me, that kind of preclude their ability to undergo surgery. You know, there are clamps that you can apply to your penis that occurs kind of externally. I actually kind of recommend just looking up kind of Cunningham clamps on Amazon. It's about $20 to $30. Essentially, it's kind of a plastic clamp with some foam backing that you can use to actually clamp your penis.
Right.
This is, you know, I always kind of offer that with kind of some reservations, because I've, you know, it can cause some degree of pain, because, you know, it's literally clamping down on your penis to check your urethra.
Yeah. I mean,
and so you can imagine.
I can imagine it not being comfortable.
Yeah. And so it can be uncomfortable. And, you know, one of the main things too is I always recommend that patients kind of make sure to unclamp it every couple hours. You know, because if you leave it on and go to bed accidentally, it can actually kind of cause necrosis to your penis, and
don't want that.
You know, that's a big problem. You don't want that.
This thing of nightmares.
Right. So that, you know, that's one option. Another kind of option for men is something called a condom catheter. Essentially what that is like what it sounds, it's a condom that you apply under your penis that's attached to a catheter, which kind of collects the urine, and so you're not dripping urine. You're still leaking urine, but you're leaking it into a container that allows you to kind of not leak into a diaper or your kind of pants. So those are two kind of options. With patients with kind of urge incontinence, you know, we talked about patients who, you know, develop like a sudden urge that want to go, and they're not able to kind of hold back that desire. You know, a lot of that has to do with kind of dietary kind of or right. behavioral kind of factors. And I always tell my patients with kind of urge or even very, you know, urinary frequency, you know, I actually had issues with severe urinary frequency because, you know, I drink, you know, 3 to 5 cups of coffee a day.
That is so much coffee, man. Come on.
A lot of caffeine going on.
That's a lot of caffeine.
And so, you know, after, you know, every patient, I'd be kind of running into the bathroom, and, you know, you got to think, you know, your bladder, you know, when something irritating touches your hand, you know, what do? You go to the bathroom, you wash your hands, right? But your bladder, you know, it's a sphere, it's an enclosed organ where if something irritating like coffee, alcohol, you know, even carbonated water, beverages, spicy foods, salt, sugar, what happens is your bladder gets irritated, and, you know, the only thing your bladder knows how to do is kind of contract. And so, you know, that signals to your brain, oh no, I have this urge to void. And, you know, sometimes patients aren't able to make it to the restroom in time. And so, you know, we do talk, you know, in patients with kind of urge incontinence, I do talk about kind of dietary and behavioral modifications that can be kind of done to kind of help them with their kind of clinical scenario.
So
yeah, I think that's excellent. Like, excellent.
Yeah. So there's a lot of lifestyle changes that can be done for depending on the type of incontinence. We've talked about now there are surgeries that can be done mostly for stress. Are there any medications that we can take to treat incontinence? And I know it's mostly for urge, but, you know, in general, are there any medications?
Right. Yeah. You know, that's a great question. And, you know, patients who fail kind of behavioral modifications, I talk about some medication options. Then there's two major kind of classes of medications that I talk to patients about. The first, you know, I always talk about, you know, the first is kind of the tried and true old school medication. And, you know, we all prescribed it, and, you know, oxybutynin, it's an anticholinergic medication that can be used to kind of relax your bladder. You know, advantages of it, you know, it's been used for a long period of time. Number two, it's dirt cheap. It's easily accessible to patients. But, you know, we always have to be kind of aware of the negative aspects of medications. So, for example, with this medication, it can cause some dry mouth. That's a very common complaint and also some constipation. Also kind of in kind of elderly patients or patients with kind of, patients who are more elderly, I'm very hesitant to prescribe this medication because, you know, it's been associated with kind of behavioral changes and cognitive decline. And so, you know, any patient over kind of the age of 60 or 65 or anyone with kind of neurologic conditions, I really kind of shy away from this class of medication. The next class of medication, they're kind of the newer kind of the IT medication now. Essentially they're beta-3 agonists, the most common of which is mirabegron. And with this medication, you know, it works really well. Again, relaxes your bladder. Major side effect that I talk to patients about is it can increase your blood pressure in a subset of men. And so patients with higher blood pressure or any patient really, I actually recommend that they get their blood pressure checked 3 to 4 weeks after initiating this medication. Some of the cons associated with the medication, because it's a newer medication, a lot of insurances won't cover it, and it can be actually quite expensive for patients.
So hard to get. Yeah, it's
yeah, it can be a little limiting to some patients.
Cool. So, you know, I think that we have pretty much covered everything. I thought I have learned a shit ton this conversation. Oh, yeah. But I think to just kind of sum it up, like, can you give us like a big picture idea on incontinence, you know, to just give us a final thought here?
You know, I think at the end of the day, when we think about incontinence, you know, again, we just have to go back to the patient. Does it bother the patient? Because this is something that's treatable. It's something that, you know, if you're bothered by it, if you're limited in your activities by it, and I think at the end of the day, you know, you got to talk to your urologist about it because there are so many treatments available. And, you know, some are just, you know, simple as behavioral changes. Some require surgery or medications, but there are plenty of options. And at least having a conversation that, you know, potentially this can kind of help you and really improve the quality of your life. And, you know, I really urge everyone, you know, I think that, you know, if there's any degree of bother, you know, this is something that, you know, I really recommend that you go speak with your urologist about.
We're urging you to come in and see.
We're stressing and urging you to come in.
Stressing and urging. Yep.
We cannot stress the urge. That's great. That's great. That was a great way of summarizing it. And it's true, right? We can't fix these problems unless you talk about it. No one wants to talk about their peeing problems. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we're here to fix it. And you, everyone heard there are so many different flavors and different ways to cater to a treatment option that works best for you. And there's different ways to go about it. But we can't do any of that unless we have you come in and talk about it with us.
Definitely.
All right, Kev, any other comments?
No, I think this was a super informative episode. Learned a lot. Dr. Lee, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise with the listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, love your podcast. You know, I think it's so awesome that, you know, we're normalizing so many kind of, you know, men's health issues that, you know, sometimes they can be difficult to talk about. And, you know, I think this is an incredible kind of resources for both patients and physicians.
Appreciate that, Dr. Lee. All right. So we're just going to wrap this up. Any questions, comments, concerns, as always, feel free to reach out to Kevin and I on our social media accounts at Justin Dubin, MD, at Kevin Chu, MD, yeah. Or Dr. Kevin Chu?
At Kevin Chu, MD.
Sorry, was right. At Kevin Chu, MD. You can check out the podcast on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, iTunes. You can listen and watch on YouTube as well and subscribe there. Download, subscribe our podcast. Give us a review, 5 stars. Comment all you'd like. That's always appreciated. You can also check us out on our website. What's the website, Kev?
It's www.themanuppod.com.
You can also find us on The Man Up Pod on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. So feel free to communicate with us in the many, many platforms that we have. But for Kevin and Dr. Lee, thanks for listening. Until next time, have a good one.